Greetings, warriors, veterans, and American-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom on our 15th anniversary show. I'm co-host and Marine vet Skip Coriel. Hoorah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Troops, if you like coffee, and who doesn't, you want to try Freedom One Coffee. It's run by an active-duty couple who love our nation and coffee. Everything, even the packaging, is amazing. Check freedom, the number one, coffee.com. Here's what we have for you this hour. We'll start by interviewing Colonel Gillum. That's right, the big man himself. The occasion is that he's been nominated to the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. Then we'll talk with the three guys who founded this show 15 years ago. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. Interviewing Colonel Gillum today are two members of the show's advisory board, retired Navy Captain Tom Burke and National Guard veteran Jenna Wilmers. All right, Tom, we'll start with a quick review of your time in the Navy and then go ahead and take on the Colonel.
Well, thank you very much, Skip. And very briefly about myself, 31 years in the Navy, mostly as a pilot, 20 years flying, 10 years driving ships, commanded one aviation squadron, two ships, one of them, one of our aircraft carriers, USS Ronald Reagan. Proud to do that. And now I serve in a number of other capacities, including on Denny's advisory board. So this interview came about because Denny was nominated for the Michigan Veterans Hall of Honor, which forced him to actually write about himself. And the staff was so amazed by the depth and breadth of your career, Denny, and the board was as well. We pushed the Colonel to let us get a chance to talk about him a little bit and his life. So, Colonel, if I could start, I just can't help by being most fascinated by your Vietnam experience. So many medals, Silver Star, Distinguished Flying Cross, a number of air medals, Purple Hearts. I wonder what medal you're most proud of. And when I get asked that question, I always mention my first Navy Achievement Medal, even though it's pretty far down in my stack of ribbons. I can imagine the same about you, but I don't know. Can you tell us what medal means the most to you?
Yeah, the medal that means the most to me is one of my Bronze Stars for Valor. It was during Tet 68 in Vietnam. My company was moving along a river, clearing bad guys out of the village, and there was a village every 2-3 miles. We were moving along. I had one platoon forward and two back, and the lead platoon came under really intense fire, which is sort of what we were expecting. This has happened before. So I moved around their left side because they were up against the river on their right side to see what was going on so that when the next platoon moved up, I could know how to deploy them. And I sort of had to crawl over a little ground. Then I could see clearly that there was a machine gun bunker with a lid, a roof and everything. I could see that was almost right in front of me. And I figured, okay, I can crawl back over that ridge, find the platoon, brief them, brief their squad leaders, have them, that take 15 minutes, and that gun is shooting at my guys. And I saw there was a small sort of trench leading towards that bunker. So I low crawled myself down along that bunker, down that little valley, this little creek, whatever it was, until I was opposite it. I had two grenades I always carried with them. I threw my two grenades. They landed close, but not close enough. And then I realized, what am I going to do? I'm here with a pistol. And then I forgot I have two radio operators, and one of them was tapping me on the shoulder or on the boot. He crawled behind me and passed me his grenades. I threw those grenades, again, close. I wasn't sure what was going to happen then, but apparently the bad guys thought that something was going to get in. There were 5 or 6 of them in that bunker. They jumped out to run, and my platoon that they had been engaging took them out. Then I moved my platoon forward and just moved on. But that was the one thing I did that I can still remember. The most exciting thing about it was when I was laying on the ground ready to throw grenades, it occurred to me I'd never thrown a grenade laying on the ground. So my first time ever was in combat. So that's the one that means the most to me.
Wow. Wow. And I know you have many others, but I'll move on. Fascinating. Incredible. Your combat time was mostly in 68, right? 1968, which was a fascinating year, not only in our nation's history, but even internationally. The Warsaw Pact, invasion of Czechoslovakia, the Chicago riots at the Democratic Convention, USS Pueblo, Martin Luther King was assassinated, the first non-proliferation treaty, Richard Nixon won the presidency, George Wallace, believe it or not, is a segregationist candidate, think back to that, won 5 states, and of course, phase 1, 2, and 3 of Tet. I wonder, did you even call it Tet back then? And also, most of this was probably completely off your radar, most of these things going on in the world, because you were too busy just doing the day-to-day in the trenches in Vietnam. Can you think back on that? You know, did you call it Tet? And did any of this world stuff mean anything to you at the time?
Yeah, that's what we called it. We called it Tet. My first tour in Vietnam was in 65, 66. I was a rifle platoon leader. Then I came back the next year, which was basically all of 67. I was a rifle company commander in the 101st Airborne Division. Well, we were the nation's immediate response team. We were ready to go anywhere, particularly to the Mideast, which is where everybody thought the trouble would be. So I was pretty much aware of what was going on there because we could have been deployed there. Then in December of 67, the whole division got deployed to Vietnam. And yeah, my focus changed. At that point, for the first about 5 months in that year, I was just fighting my company. The last half of that year, I had been moved to division headquarters where I was running the Tactical Operations Center. I ran the night shift. And because not a lot happened at night, I was able to follow some of the stuff you just talked about. But for the most part, yeah, I was focused on Vietnam, the Tet Offensive, which is what we called it then, and just wondering how my guys were doing since I was no longer a company commander. So yeah, I was aware of much of that, particularly the last half of the year, but no, I wasn't paying a lot of attention to it.
I don't blame you, sir. You know, thinking back on it, 1968 and all the things that were going on, it almost makes me think that maybe today isn't as bad as we all think it is. You got any thoughts on that?
Well, I think in a lot of ways we're worse off. Our southern border, as an example, I mean, the people I know that live there, the people I've talked to, it's a horrible situation. The Border Patrol people down there have a higher suicide rate because they're not getting the support they need. The national budget is out of control. China's always been an issue. Russia's always been an issue. But Russia, Ukraine, what are we going to do there? The thing that bothers me most is the sort of woke attitude that's in our schools, in our military academies. So I think things are worse off now than then, but it wasn't good back then either.
Yeah. You sobered me up on that point. Those are good concerns. Other than Vietnam, looking at your incredible military background, it was very diverse, infantry diverse, but also included war planning. And eventually you got into teaching. As I understand it, you were a Mideast war planner before Desert Shield and Desert Storm. Any takeaways from that? Did it turn out as you imagined back when you were planning back in the day?
Well, my headquarters job was to reinforce overseas commands. So my job was to be prepared to reinforce the Middle East. That's what I did. And frankly, the Desert Shield was a plan that I sort of contributed to designing, though we thought we were defending Saudi Arabia against a Russian or a Soviet attack. It worked pretty well, though, anyway, since the Iraqis used Soviet equipment and Soviet tactics. But it was a war that just happened. One thing for sure, I'd retired by that time, and the media knew I'd been a Mideast war planner, so I was very popular with the media for about 4 days. But that was something that we certainly did well.
Well, one last plug. You already kind of mentioned it, but I did want to talk at least very briefly about your teaching background and how you took that into your civilian life, school boards and teaching, the role for education going forward to get ourselves back on track. What is the key role for education in improving some of the things you just talked about before?
Well, the biggest thing I'd like to see taught in schools and taught by parents and practiced is stop calling names. I'm not talking about kidding names. I mean, racist? Come on. The best way to find somebody who's a racist is to see who's calling other people racist. That includes liars. And people tend to call people whatever their weaknesses are. You know, I have friends of the opposite sides of many political issues who I can discuss things with and where we can be friends. But this requires listening when the other person's talking, not waiting to talk at them. So my final point on that is I think schools need to teach students how to think, not what to think.
Yeah, hear, hear. Hear, hear, indeed. Well, Danny, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you, and I appreciate you you taking the time to let us embarrass you a little bit and talking about yourself for once. I appreciate it very much. Skip, over to you.
All right. Captain Burke, that was fantastic. Danny, I didn't know all that stuff about you, so we'll have to have coffee and talk about some more details. But we are not done interviewing the Colonel, and Tom and Jenna will stay with us. This is Marine Vet co-host Skip Coriel on Front Lines of Freedom. It's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. We'll be right back.
The VA frequently denies veterans disability benefits for PTSD. Barry Law has been helping fellow veterans with PTSD fight for compensation for over 20 years. At Barry Law, We've spent decades building a team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees to provide veterans with maximum firepower when appealing VA decisions. To appeal your decision, visit PTSDlawyers.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
I'm Marine Vet Skip Coriel, co-host on Frontlines of Freedom. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our interview with Colonel Gillum on the occasion of his nomination to the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. Now, another member of the Frontlines of Freedom Advisory Board, Jenna Wilmers, will take on the Colonel. Jenna, I know you're the commander of the American Legion post the Colonel belongs to, and that you hold other leadership positions in the Legion. Please share with us a bit about your military service and your Legion involvement. Then go ahead and take on the Colonel.
Thank you, Skip. Yes, I served in the Michigan Army National Guard for 8 years as a weapons and supply specialist. And now I do serve as the commander of American Legion Post 1111 in Walker, Michigan, as well as I am currently the 5th District Commander for the American Legion. And we have the honor of having Colonel Gillum as a member of our post, in which he gives back so much knowledge and tenure in history. We just so much appreciate having him. So now I'd like to take it over to Denny here. Your life story and things that you have done are just so impeccable. And I thought I knew a lot of them, but in reading it, I really found out that I didn't, and there was a lot more. And I just wonder where you found time for it all along with your faith and family. You married your beautiful bride, Marilyn, in 1966. Tell us about your family and how they supported you during your military career.
Well, my first duty assignment after graduating from West Point and going to Airborne and Ranger Schools was Fort Carson, Colorado. And after I'd been there about 6 months, I had volunteered for duty in Vietnam. I'd gotten orders and I got set up on a blind date and met this lady named Marilyn. It took me 2 weeks to propose. It took her 2 weeks to say yes. And then she was out there attending a college seminar and then it was over. So she disappeared. I showed up at her place in Cleveland, Ohio to meet her parents and deliver her her engagement ring. And then I was gone for a year. So she learned how to support military people the hard way. Her dad was a World War II vet, so it wasn't totally radical to them. And she was the firstborn of 5 kids. So I don't know if she's ready for it or not, but she put up with me. And then I came back. We got married. We got assigned to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, where I was an airborne company commander. I loved it. It was a dream situation. I had the best job any infantry captain could have. And I was married to the lady that I was wildly in love with. And 1 year later, the whole division got sent back to Vietnam for a year. So in the first 3 years Marilyn knew me, I was gone 2 of them. Maybe that's why she can put up with me. I'm not sure. But she has supported me in 100 different ways. Fortunately, that was the last 2 times I was gone for any kind of period of time. But somehow she puts up with me and I'm really glad.
That's awesome. You mentioned that you went to West Point. What drew you there? Did you always want to go there? Was it something that just kind of came up, you know, and what was your biggest takeaway?
Well, I was the first person in my direct line to ever wear a military uniform. Many of my relatives were cops. My dad's father was a police officer killed in the line of duty. My uncle was an FBI agent. My son's a police officer. So law enforcement seemed to be the thing. I was the oddball in that. I'm not sure what got me interested in the Army, but probably it was I had the opportunity and took Army ROTC in high school. And that really rang my bell. I did want to go to West Point. Going there was everything I wanted to do. It was an incredible challenge. It molded me. The West Point motto is duty, honor, country. And that's me. And it really made me that theme. Plus, they made us think. At that time, everybody had to major in engineering. And I figured out later, because it makes you think, it makes you do analysis. You don't remember what to think. You learn how to think yourself. So the duty, honor, country, value set, plus learning how to think is what impacted me. And right after that, I went to Army Ranger School, which was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life. It's a 9-week course. And it was there that I learned that I could push myself harder than I thought I could and could perform well. That really made a big change. Those were the big foundational things in my life. I always sort of was raised believing in God. Later on in my life, I made a major commitment to serve God. That was the other one big change in my life. No, the Army was something that I loved. I served for 22 years and then retired. Part of me would like to stay in. The other part knew it was time to get out. But I loved it. It worked well for me.
Nice. In the military, it's common knowledge that even though someone takes off the uniform at the completion of service, they still continue to serve. How do you still continue to serve other than those you serve each week with this radio show?
Well, initially, I just talked to people, but then I got this weird idea after I'd been out a couple of years that I should join the American Legion. And a sergeant major who had served in the unit that I had served in before I retired was the commander of a local American Legion post. So I showed up at his post, and for some reason he let me in. A number of years later, I joined the AMVETS too, and I just stayed in touch with military. You know, one of the things that bugged me, I've got a really good friend who, like you, served his 8 years in the National Guard. And he says he doesn't consider himself a veteran because he didn't serve during war or something like that. And I said, Gord, it wasn't your job to start a war. It was your responsibility to make yourself available in case the country needed you. You can't do more than that. I didn't want you out there starting a war. So I've done a bit trying to encourage people who felt maybe they didn't serve enough or well enough to let them know that, nope, you made your life available. I think that's something that I've done that I'm proudest of.
So, Colonel, what was the best advice someone ever gave you?
Actually, my first assignment as a rifle platoon leader, as a brand new second lieutenant, my platoon sergeant, who was a very senior guy and knew a lot, said, get all the farm boys you can get into your unit. They know how to work. And I've used that the whole of my life, even after I got out. So I put that right up there at the top.
That's awesome. That's such great advice. Well, thank you, Colonel, for taking the time to share your story with us. We will send it back over to Skip.
All right, Jenna, that was great. All good questions. Now, before we sign off for this segment, let's give Tom and Jenna one last chance to have one final comment. Tom, what's your final comment on Colonel Gillum?
Well, Danny, I'm just proud to be a member of your board of advisors, proud to be on your team. Couldn't be prouder of you and thrilled we got a chance to talk about you today. Hua.
Jenna, how about you?
Colonel, I'm just so honored to even know you and to get to know you even more in-depthly. And I just thank you for your service and all that you do for us.
And I can't thank the three of you enough for doing this. I'm so honored I can't find the words.
All right. Thank you, Jenna and Tom. And thank you, Colonel, for just being an all-around great, fantastic guy. I'll teach you how to throw a grenade later on. But thank you for taking the time to join us today. And thank you for your service to our nation. Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with the three guys who founded Frontlines of Freedom 15 years ago. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is co-host Marine Vet Skip Coriel on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Do 26 with each arm twice, then take a break. But stay in the area. We'll be right back.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
If you are suffering from anxiety, joint muscle aches, or trouble sleeping, try Day 3 Creation, a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products created from natural, organic, laboratory-tested ingredients. Day 3 comes from a servant's heart as God calls us to care for each other with compassion and honesty. 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing disabled vets with service dogs. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. It's a pleasure to welcome the guys who decided that we should have a military talk radio show. Frontlines of Freedom co-founder and co-host Josh Breymeyer and the former manager at Wood Radio several times, Phil Tower. Phil, glad you could join us again, bro.
Danny, I'm glad to be here.
And Josh, co-hosts don't get any special greeting, but I'm glad you're here.
Well, I've kind of been an AWOL co-host, Denny, so I don't deserve the special greeting right now. I've been busy with other things, but man, have we had one heck of a ride.
It has been. Phil, as I recollect, all this started because you decided to hire some college kid who was a student at Grand Valley State University to help out at Wood Radio. Do I remember it right?
That is correct. And Josh is one of many GVSU Laker grads that I ended up hiring, students and then grads. And it was a great hire. Obviously, he has gone on to national notoriety and prominence. And I, you know, I'm very proud of that. I'm especially grateful for the time that we had working together because we did a lot of great things. Josh was my right-hand guy in a lot of ways and helped really craft the sound of the station at a point where we were really starting to reach an apex of success that really we had about a 5, 6, 7 year streak where the station was just really on fire. That was also during the period where, you know, Colonel, that we brought in Rick Beckett and Scott Winters and everything changed from there. And it was a great experience. And along the way, Josh was the one who had the idea to start this military show, which I was very intrigued about. And he presented it capably and thought out. And that's kind of how it all came together.
That sounds right. Josh, as I recollect, we were friends through church. Our families went to the same church. You helped me out when I ran a couple of political campaigns. And then you joined the Air Force and were stationed in Los Angeles. And that's sort of where it started in your head, right?
That's correct, Denny. Yes. I worked at Wood Radio for 3 years during college. And then when I was in my last year with the Air Force based at LA Air Force Base as an acquisitions officer, I was also working for Clear Channel out of Burbank and got to work on the Captain Dale Dye Show. And if anyone has watched more than a handful of military movies, you have seen Dale Dye's handiwork and you may have also seen him on screen. He runs a company called Warriors, Inc. and is the leading military consultant in Hollywood. Well, Captain Dye would sometimes have to take 6 months off at a time to go film an HBO military miniseries. And he was really a gem that was just going to be on KFI, you know, as he could be. And his schedule didn't permit him being in syndication. So after I separated from the Air Force and came back to Grand Rapids, I really felt that there was a need for every community to have a show like the one that Captain Dye was doing, and that if it couldn't be done locally, then that could be filled through a syndicated program. So we started with our Veterans Day special, which I kind of scripted for you, Denny, and you were so open to learning some new tricks. You said you'd done radio interviews but hadn't hosted a show, but I remember you saying, well, you can teach me. And I just loved your openness to that. And then we have one other person to thank that's not on the call here right now, in addition to Phil Tower, and that is Henry Caponia, the sales manager at the time at Wood Radio as well. So once they both greenlighted having Front Lines of Freedom on as a regular program, about 7 months later in June of 2007, because we're 15 years now, that those two leaders and executives at the company were the ones that made it, allowed it to all happen.
You know, apparently you learned a lot while you were there in college, and I learned from you. I taught college a long time, and I've always said education is vitally important, and occasionally it happens in classrooms. So apparently we learned it in life, didn't we?
We did, but the funny part about Phil saying about all these little Grand Valley student babies or talk radio kids that he's had, he admired the university so much, he's now a professor there. Right, Phil?
I am. And it is a school that's really come into its own, the School of Communications. There's a multimedia journalism major and some really incredibly talented people that have graduated there who are now working in the industry. You are one of them. I can name a half dozen other from Grand Rapids who started at iHeart, and really, you know, that speaks to the program, speaks also to the quality of the student and the individual. And let's just say that it's something that was very infectious in that building. A lot of success stories born out of that building at 77 Monroe Center in the heart of Grand Rapids.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking about the birth of Front Lines of Freedom. Well, all I know is that one day I got a phone call asking if I'd like to host a military talk radio show. Man, that came out of nowhere. And somehow I came up with a yes. And as Josh mentioned, we spent about 7 months putting things together and tryouts and stuff. And we started the first weekend in June, 15 years ago. And it has been quite a ride. It has been. Before I let you guys go, Phil, you just mentioned your teaching. What else are you doing right now? What's going on in your life?
Well, I'm a busy person. I'm working for a lot of different people. I'm primarily consulting and serving people in different capacities. I do work for iHeartMedia nationally with Premier Networks. I am a talent coach and help produce some of their programming. Kind of a special projects guy, and I also do some work locally for iHeartRadio here in Grand Rapids. And I, you know, basically anybody who's crazy enough to pay me for my opinion on their content, I work with them. I love what I do. I love encouraging people to create content, whether it's a podcast or it's broadcast content. And it's certainly a dynamic time to be in the business. And Denny, it's no small feat that Front Lines of Freedom is a national brand and is heard all across the country. And 15 years in radio syndication years is like dog years. That's like 80 years in real life. So that's quite a commendable milestone. And I want to congratulate you on that. It's something to be proud of.
Thank you, brother. Josh, what are you doing now? I know you're still part of the Front Lines of Freedom team and you're doing a lot for us, but talk about your business.
Well, Denny, also, I kind of feel like you give me too much of the credit sometimes. Well, we both got this going, and I'll never forget about 4 weeks after we got Front Lines of Freedom on the air, I actually had to move out of the area. And so fortunately, Phil Tower hired my younger brother, Michael, who is our production director at Talk Media Network, and is the technical producer for this program, Front Lines of Freedom. And he has been in that role for the majority of those years, those 15 years. But he took over the reins on that live Sunday night show that you initially hosted. And without him, we wouldn't be here as well as some other folks at 1260 The Pledge over in Zealand. When there was an interruption in being able to broadcast with iHeart, we also were on with Citadel, which became Cumulus. And a radio station that's no longer in the talk format in the market, WJRW. And so there really are more people along the way that did pitch in. But I run Talk Media Network full time now, and have been doing that for almost 10 years now. The company's 12 and a half years old. And this literally, we just passed the 10-year weekend of starting to syndicate our own programs, of which Front Lines of Freedom was one of our first four shows. And we're knocking on the door of 200 affiliates here for Frontlines of Freedom. And I look forward to celebrating that milestone with you as well.
We will celebrate it together. Thank you, Josh, for being my teacher, my supporter, my good friend. I appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thank you. It has been an honor, Colonel.
And Phil, I couldn't do it all without you. You were the guy that I could always count on. Thank you.
It's been an honor, Colonel. Thank you so much.
Well, troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at ptsdlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com. Hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online. See how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM. 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from your listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Sue, an Air Force vet, sends you and your whole team a big pat on the back for 15 years of a great show.
Thanks, Sue. It's been a fun ride. I'm glad you joined us.
And Navy vet Sam really appreciated hearing that honor flights are back on. They're great.
I totally agree with you, Sam. I'm a fan, too. Been on a couple of them. Okay, now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, on June 6, 1862, the Union claimed Memphis, Tennessee, the Confederacy's fifth largest city, a naval manufacturing yard, and a key southern industrial center. One of the top priorities for Union commanders at the start of the war was to sever the Confederacy along the Mississippi. In April 1862, the Union scored major victories toward this goal with the capture of New Orleans in the south and the fall of Island No. 10 in the north. On June 4, a rebel garrison abandoned the fort after Confederate troops withdrew from Corinth, Mississippi, leaving them dangerously isolated in Union-held territory. The next day, the Union flotilla steamed to Memphis unopposed. The city had no fortifications because the Confederates had directed their resources towards strengthening the installation upriver. All that stood between the Yankees was a rebel fleet of 8 ships. On the morning of June 6, thousands of residents lined the shores to watch the action. 3 Confederate ships were rammed and sunk, and 1 Union ship was struck and severely damaged. Union guns aboard the other ships began a devastating barrage that destroyed all but 1 of the Confederate vessels. The rebel fleet was decimated, while the Union suffered only 4 casualties and 1 damaged ship.
That counts as a victory by any standards. And on June 9, 1863, the largest cavalry battle of the Civil War was fought at Brandy Station, Virginia. After the Confederate victory in Chancellorsville, Virginia, in early May, Confederate General Robert Lee began to prepare for another invasion of the North by placing General Stuart's cavalry at Brandy Station to screen his army as it started towards the Blue Ridge Mountains. Stuart used this time to stage a grand parade to boost morale and show off his dashing troopers to the local residents. However, his pompous display was observed by uninvited Union soldiers under the command of General Alfred Pleasonton, who lurked across the Rappahannock River. And on June 9th, Pleasonton struck the surprised rebels in a 2-pronged attack. The Confederates eventually rallied, and the battle raged all day. The battle's key moment came when Union troops headed to seize Fleetwood Hill, from which they could shell the entire battlefield. Confederate Lieutenant John Carter struggled to mount one cannon on the hill and fired a single shot that stopped the Union troopers. The Yankee officer leading the charge feared the rebels had a line of guns sitting just over the top of the hill, when in fact it was a single gun with barely enough powder for a single shot. The move brought time for the Confederates, and they held the hill. The battle continued with many cavalry charges and saber fights, in addition to hand-to-hand combat by dismounted cavalry. In the end, Stuart's forces held the field. Although technically a rebel victory, the battle demonstrated how far the Union cavalry had come since the beginning of the war. Stuart's cavalry had been the master of their Union counterparts, but its invincibility was shattered on that muggy Virginia day.
On June 6, 1918, the first large-scale battle fought by American soldiers in World War I began in Belleau Wood. In late May 1918, the third German offensive of the year penetrated the Western Front to within 45 miles of Paris. U.S. forces under General John Pershing helped halt the German advance, and on June 6, Pershing ordered a counteroffensive to drive the Germans out of Belleau Wood. U.S. Marines attacked four German divisions in the woods and suffered 1,000 casualties the first day. For the next 3 weeks, the Marines launched attacks into the forested area, but German General Ludendorff was determined to deny us victory. Ludendorff continually brought up reinforcements and attacked our forces with machine guns, artillery, and gas. Finally, on June 26, we prevailed, but at the cost of nearly 10,000 dead, wounded, or missing.
The Marines did a great job. And on 6 June 1944, now known as D-Day, General Dwight Eisenhower, then Supreme Commander of Allied Forces in World War II, implemented the massive invasion of Europe called Operation Overlord. By the first week in June 1944, Nazi Germany controlled most of Western Europe. Allied forces numbering about 156,000 were posed to travel by ship or plane over the English Channel to attack the German army dug in at Normandy, France on the June 5th. But Eisenhower had a window of only 4 days of decent weather in which an invasion could be possible. When bad weather hit the Channel on June 4, Eisenhower considered postponing Operation Overlord. After a promising report from his meteorologist, Eisenhower said, "Let's go." That night, Ike composed a solemn and inspirational statement that was delivered the next day as a letter into the hands of every soldier, sailor, and airman set to embark, reminding the men that the eyes of the world are upon you and that their opponents would fight savagely. Ike exhorted them to be brave, show their devotion to duty, and accept nothing less than victory. In closing, he wished his troops good luck and sought the blessings of Almighty God on this great and noble undertaking. Meanwhile, back at the White House, President Roosevelt waited for word of Operation Overlord's commencement. Roosevelt tinkered with a speech he planned to deliver once the invasion began. He turned the speech into a prayer entitled, "Let Our Hearts Be Stout." And at 3 a.m. on June 6, Roosevelt received a call that the invasion had commenced. He notified the nation by radio that very night. On June 8, 1944, after years of planning, preparation, and placating the egos among his military peers, Eisenhower reported that the Allies had made a harrowing and deadly but successful landing on the beaches of Normandy. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
Well, all of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, two men entered a residence in Carbon Hill, Alabama on Thursday morning and shot and injured the homeowner. But the homeowner was also armed and fatally shot both suspects. Police Chief Anton Cobb was quoted as saying, quote, "When I arrived at the scene, I noticed there were two suspects dead inside the home. They had ski masks on." The deceased suspects were identified as Clinton Embry and Dwayne Turner Jr., both 47, and both from Talladega County. The 27-year-old owner of the home was shot multiple times and remained at a UAB hospital in Birmingham. The victim was recovering after surgery.
Thanks, Colonel. And thank God the homeowner survived and is recovering from his wounds. This is a great story in every regard, but it gives us an excellent opportunity to talk about one important aspect of combat, and that is this. Always fight through to the end and never give up. Do you remember when you were in boot camp? The countless number of push-ups, the bends and thrusts, the pull-ups, the jumping jacks that never seemed to end? So many times you felt like quitting, but you didn't. Or maybe you've been in actual combat as well
having to deal with the terror of knowing you were about to die, watching those around you being wounded or maybe even being wounded yourself. You couldn't just give up. You had to reach down inside yourself and come up with something extra, something special that most people never experience. In boot camp, you were taught that when you go into a fight, you expect to get hurt. But when you get hurt, you don't just roll over and die. You fight back with everything you have until you win. So many in our society today were never taught this. But you don't have to be military to live this way. Remember in high school when you were playing football? You squared off against an opposing player and he knocked you flat on your butt, causing searing pain. You didn't just give up. You gritted your teeth and you went at him even harder the next time, determined not to be bested. Or maybe you ran the 400-meter dash in track. That race is a butt kicker. You sprint full out for close to a minute, hoping you don't puke at the finish line. You fight through the cramps, the exhaustion, and all the pain. You are forced to push yourself to the limit of physical endurance, and then you reach down inside yourself and push even harder. That is the aspect of deadly combat that this homeowner excelled at. Not only did he fight back, but even though he was shot, even though he was outnumbered and outgunned, he fought back, and because of his courage and his indomitable spirit, he killed both attackers and won the day. Warrior spirit is the baseline of self-defense. You can have the best guns, the most ammo, the highest technology, but if you surrender, then none of it matters. You are defeated. Front Lines of Freedom salutes this 27-year-old homeowner for his courage and for fighting through the pain and the terror. I don't know if this man is a military veteran, but he can share a foxhole with me anytime.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is Mammoth County 9/11 and its aftermath. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. It's cool. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd really appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll address STARS. That has to do with problems at our service academies, among other things, with General Rod Bishop. And Marine vet Phil McClay will discuss his book on the Age of Endless War. And we'll learn about the Combat Control Foundation. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase the book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxhole for 15 years. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.